Voices are action.
In Real World Radio. Welcome everyone to another edition of Voices are Action, Real World Radio's new podcast series, where we bring the voices from the territories. On today's edition, our fifth episode, we will discuss the work ahead of the People's Summit in Belém, Brazil. We will talk about the response of social movements around the world to the UN Climate Change Conference, the COP30. Also, FIAN International and Focus on the Global South published the report Lords of the Land, Transnational Landowners, Inequality, and the Case for Redistribution. And then we will discuss From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide, a new report by Francesca Albanese, the Special Rapporteur on the Situation of Human Rights in the Palestinian Territories occupied since 1967, on the role of transnational corporations in Palestine.
Voices are action.
In Real World Radio.
From November the 12th to the 16th, a People's Summit will be held in the Brazilian city of Belém, in the state of Pará, in the Amazon, as a response of social movements around the world to a new edition of the UN Climate Change Conference, which will take place in the same city from November the 10th to the 21st. This will be the 30th edition of the Conference of the Parties to the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change. There, the world's governments will sit down to renegotiate solutions to the climate crisis. But the background is not promising. Social movements and organizations around the world that have been fighting for climate justice and solutions to climate change for decades warn year after year that the UN negotiations are co-opted by corporate power. They warn that the only thing on the negotiation tables are packages of false market solutions that allow governments in the global north and corporations to continue business as usual. In this context, grassroots movements, collectives, networks, and civil society organizations from Brazil have been working since August 2023 to build a process of convergence to organize the People's Summit as an autonomous space alongside the COP30. Women's movements and organizations, trade unions, indigenous peoples, family farmers and peasants, quilombola people, traditional peoples and communities, Black people, young people, environmentalists, workers and human rights defenders, among many others, are organizing this great space for convergence of the peoples in the Brazilian Amazon. The People's Summit manifesto states that the objective is to strengthen popular mobilization and converge on unified agendas: socio-environmental, anti-patriarchal, anti-capitalist, anti-colonialist, anti-racist, and rights-based, while respecting their diversities and specificities, united by a future of well-being. In the current context, more than ever, we need to advance in collective spaces that defend democracy and international solidarity, confront the far right, fascism, fundamentalism, wars, the financialization of nature, and the climate crisis, the text adds. To learn more about the People's Summit in Belém, visit cupuladospovoscop30.org. Friends of the Earth International is one of the many organizations and networks worldwide that will participate in the People's Summit and has been coordinating with Brazilian organizations for months. Now we will hear from Kirtana Chandrasekaran, Climate Justice and Energy Coordinator at Friends of the Earth International, in a presentation she gave via Zoom on July the 3rd at a public hearing at the Brazilian Congress in Brasilia, which addressed the political agenda of the People's Summit.
Hi. My name is Kirtana Chandrasekaran, and I'm with Friends of the Earth International, which is a global environmental federation of more than 75 members and millions of grassroots supporters and communities all around the world. And we have joined together with almost 400 big networks representing a big variety and diverse people's movements, including peasants, indigenous peoples, workers, women, anti-racist, for sexual and gender diversity, environmental, and many, many, many more movements who are coming together to organize the Cúpula de Pueblos around the COP30 in Brazil. And we are coming together because we understand from our territories and from our fights that the fight for climate justice is a fight for everybody's survival. The window is closing for us to achieve the 1.5 degree target. And even though many of the big polluting countries talk, will talk the talk, In fact, what we can see is that fossil fuel burning is growing. We have more and more extraction. We have more false solutions. And there are very few countries who are actually taking the steps needed. But we are coming together because we know that what we need is a transformative agenda change to actually achieve climate justice. Because in order to achieve climate justice, we need, for example, to achieve land rights. We need to keep people in the territories. When you talk about forests, we know, for example, that the reason that deforestation occurs is due to agribusiness, is due to logging companies, it's due to extraction of minerals and of fossil fuels. But rather than stopping these, people come with market-based and false solutions for deforestation. At the same time, meanwhile, we know that almost 54% of highly biodiverse areas are in the hands of indigenous people and local communities who know how to preserve them. So we are asking for dignity and human rights and land rights for these people. We are asking that we are coming together because we know that we need our power all together to ensure that the governments of the world actually take note and listen. And start to take some steps to actually address the climate crisis and be serious about it. We have many demands, which we will take to the COP30 with our combined voice. We will ask the Brazilian presidency and the UNFCCC to kick the big polluters out. We have thousands, almost 2,000 fossil fuel lobbyists who come to the COP every year. We used to not even know who they are. And we're asking that there is a proper framework for accountability inside the UNFCCC to understand, you know, who these people are, to make sure that they don't have a say in the negotiations. Because these, for example, are the just 100 corporations who are responsible for nearly 70% of global emissions. And these are the people who are in the room at COP30 taking decisions. But we are the people and the masses who have the power, who stand on the other side. So we want to kick the big polluters out. We want to demand serious and real public finance for people's solutions on the ground that the last COP failed to deliver, that we will demand again. We want an end to false solutions, to carbon markets, to geoengineering, carbon capture and storage, all these fake ideas, which is never going to achieve, which is a kind of fantasy, and will mean that we were overshooting even more and more the 1.5 degree target. We want to ask for our demands that people stay on the territories, that we have the solutions, you know, that people want to build, but that needs to be listened. The call for just transition from the workers, but also many of our communities, means that we don't try to replicate the current extractive fossil fuel system with the same type of system, with energy produced for elites and 800 million people without access to energy. We don't want to produce that same system, but with renewables. We want fairness and justice in the system. And we want the idea of sufficiency, about who gets to decide, you know, about who needs energy, to ensure energy access for everybody, for women to take care of their care needs. So we know that all our agendas really are together, that we can build a solution and we can build our power to demand from the governments who will assemble at the COP30 and the Brazilian presidency on the road to the COP, our many solutions that we have, our demands as people, that we political subjects, that we get to demand, and to oppose the takeover of the climate COP by corporations and corporate interests.
Voices are action.
In Real World Radio.
And for the next topic of our Voices are Action, now we will read some key messages and then we will tell you what they are about. Interconnected trends of land grabbing and increasing land inequality have led to the emergence of a select group of transnational landowners who own and control huge amounts of land around the world. The top 10 control a staggering 404,457 square kilometers, an area roughly the size of Japan, Zimbabwe, or Paraguay. The transnational accumulation of land, forests, and territories by corporate and financial entities is an integral part of growing land concentration and inequality, exemplifying the massive transfer of wealth to the corporate sector and its associated elite, the ultra-high net worth individuals. The fact that vast tracts of land located across different state jurisdictions are brought under the control of distant corporate entities for the sake of global supply chains or global financial capital flows undermines state sovereignty and people's self-determination. What I have just read are some of the most important messages derived from the report titled Lords of the Land, Transnational Landowners, Inequality and the Case for Redistribution, published in June by FIAN International and focused on the Global South. But surely you are all eager to know which the 10 largest transnational landowners are, who together control 404,457 square kilometers. Well, here they are. Blue Carbon, focused on carbon projects in Africa and the Caribbean. Macquarie Group, from Australia, which operates through agricultural investment vehicles with holdings in Australia and Brazil. The Olam Group, engaged in extensive food commodity operations and plantation management. Manulife, from Canada, which owns lands via Hancock Natural Resource Group, including timberland and farmland. Arauco, from Chile, one of the world's largest forestry companies with major land holdings in South America. Shell, from the UK, which controls land for ethanol production in Brazil via a joint venture, Raízen, with growing involvement in carbon offset markets. Tia Nuvin, from the US, which manages large tracts of farmland across Latin America, the US, and other regions, often through joint ventures like Radar in Brazil. Edizione, from Italy, the holding company of the Benetton family, owns pasture and cropland in Argentina. Cresud, from Argentina, a company with a portfolio of agricultural land and real estate assets, with major land holdings in South America. And Wilmar International, from Singapore, a global agro-industrial company with vast palm oil plantations in Southeast Asia and Africa. The authors of the report by FIAN International and Focus on the Global South are Luciana Rolón, Philip Seffert, Sofia Monsalve, and Shalmali Gutal. The report can be found on the websites of both organizations, FIAN.org and FocusWeb.org. We will now hear from Luciana Rolón, who, in addition to being one of the authors, was also the lead researcher for the report.
I am Luciana Rolón, and I would like to share with you some key findings from the report Lords of the Land, which we produced together with FIAN International and Focus on the Global South. The report identifies the 10 largest transnational owners of agricultural land in the world. These are large agribusiness companies, forestry companies, and financial actors such as pension funds and asset managers. Why is it important to look at this? Because we are facing a growing global concentration of land ownership, driven by financialization and speculation. Since the 2008 crisis, land has become a highly sought-after asset. It is stable, profitable in the long term, and acts as a refuge from inflation. This has brought in new players, such as investment funds and carbon funds, which are acquiring land, especially in the global south. This is often done through opaque or complex structures. Public information on who owns the land is scarce, even more so with these opaque forms of tenure. According to agricultural census data, 70% of the world's agricultural land is in the hands of the 1% of the largest farms. In contrast, farms of less than 2 hectares, which represent 84% of the total, have access to only 12% of the land. Despite the magnitude of the phenomenon, there is a critical lack of information about these large landowners. How much control do they have? How do they operate, and what is their impact? Our report seeks to provide evidence to better understand these dynamics and fuel the debate on the need for a more just and transparent redistribution. To identify these 10 actors, we implemented a methodology we call a puzzle approach, combining academic sources, collaborative databases such as Land Matrix, corporate reports, and interviews with activists, journalists, and officials, and cross-referencing the information. We identified 10 corporations that control more than 40 million hectares, an area equivalent to Japan or Paraguay. Among them are agribusinesses such as Olam, Shell, and Cresud, forestry companies such as Arauco, and financial actors such as Tia Nuvin, one of the largest pension funds in the United States. Half of these companies are based in countries in the global north and half in the south, but 80% of the land they control is in the global south, revealing a clearly colonial dynamic in capital flows. This level of concentration is not only unequal, It also affects ecosystems, food sovereignty, and local communities. Many of these companies have been involved in land conflicts, deforestation, and human rights violations. A case in point is Blue Carbon, a company from the United Arab Emirates created in 2022 that in just 2 years announced carbon credit projects covering 24.5 million hectares. This is an example of how carbon markets are opening up new avenues for land grabbing. In addition, large asset managers such as BlackRock and Vanguard are shareholders in several of these companies, demonstrating the growing role of the financial system in land control and its orientation towards extractive projects, all involving large-scale monoculture or converted lands. In response to this, FIAN proposes four lines of action. Improve access to public information on who owns the land and how it is operated. Improve international coordination to obtain quality information. Regulate foreign investment and demand corporate accountability for social and environmental impacts. Improve international coordination and articulation to carry this out. Implement progressive land taxes, wealth and emissions to combat evasion and finance public policies, and finally, reactivate agrarian reforms as a tool to slow down and reverse this concentration. Because, as we say in the report, land concentration is not inevitable, but rather the result of political decisions, weak regulatory frameworks, and a model that prioritizes financial profitability over human rights and the environment. Thank you for listening.
Voices are action.
In Real World Radio.
And Francesca Albanese, the United Nations Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories, wrote a report highlighting the corporate network surrounding the genocide and crimes against humanity being committed by the Zionist State of Israel in Palestine. The report is titled From Economy of Occupation to Economy of Genocide, and it points not only to the typical companies that benefit from wars and occupations, such as armed manufacturers, but also to a much larger network that includes financial and educational institutions and technology companies, among others. In total, 48 companies are named and denounced. The report focuses on how corporate interests underpin Israeli settler colonial and the twofold logic of displacement and replacement, Albanese said about the report. Israel depends on corporations to maintain the machinery of genocide, meaning that corporations play a fundamental role as the killing and colonization of Palestinians is highly profitable for them. Let's share some facts from this report. Albanese documented that in the last 21 months, the Tel Aviv Stock Exchange has risen 213%, accumulating $225.7 billion in stock market profits. Israel has dropped 85,000 tons of bombs on Palestinian territory, six times the amount dropped on Hiroshima. The corporations singled out in this area are Lockheed Martin and Italy's Leonardo S.p.A., which support the global program for F-35 fighter jets on which Israel relies to bomb Gaza. Also included is the Japanese corporation Fanuc, which provides robotic machinery for weapons production lines. Airbnb listings in illegal Israeli settlements have increased by 152%. This platform, together with Booking, helps illegal settlements by advertising properties and hotel rooms in territory occupied by Israel. 64% of Israeli exports during the genocide were technology. IBM, Microsoft, Google, and Amazon provided the Israeli army with crucial cloud and AI infrastructure when their own cloud services were overloaded, helping them to continue the genocide. In 2024, an Israeli colonel described these companies' cloud services as a weapon in every sense of the word. These companies enable the collection, storage, and government use of Palestinians' biometric data, which supports a discriminatory regime and enhances its data surveillance capabilities. Chevron owns the largest share of the Tamar gas field, which supplies Israel with 70% of its energy. Chevron benefits from the illegal siege, and its supplies help consolidate the Israeli occupation and colonization. There is also BP, British Petroleum, which is another major oil supplier to Israel. Drummond and Glencore also export coal to Israel. Caterpillar, Hyundai of South Korea, and the Volvo Group of Sweden provide Israel with heavy machinery for the demolition of homes and the development of illegal settlements in the West Bank. And there are also banks, BNP Paribas from France and Barclays from the UK, are mentioned as having intervened to allow Israel to contain interest rate premiums despite a credit downgrade. Of course, Israel declared Francesca Albanese a persona non grata. She is not allowed to enter the territory, as well as diplomats, humanitarian workers, etc. And the US mission to the UN renewed its calls on UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres to condemn Albanese and remove her from her position. We will now hear from Francesca Albanese herself.
I mean, this is a record. I am the first UN person to impose a sanction for what? For having exposed the genocide? For having denounced the system? I mean, they've never challenged me on the facts. I've given these companies the opportunity to correct me. Instead, they have gone whining to the US administration to treat me as they are. It's okay. This speaks to who they are. I continue to do what I have to do. Yes, of course it will be challenging, but if what I want to say, if a human being, I'm just a human being, I'm not even paid to do what I'm doing, okay? So I'm putting really everything I have in the line. If I can do that, all of you, all your people, all your politicians and my people can do at least that. Together we can stand this pressure and together we can really get out of this genocide as with a hope for a better world, because otherwise it would be much worse.
Voices are action.
In Real World Radio.
World-renowned economists, including former Greek finance minister Yanis Varoufakis, French economist Thomas Piketty, and Lebanese-American statistician and essayist Nassim Nicholas Taleb, praised Albanese for her report and issued a letter in her support. There are also initiatives to nominate her for the Nobel Peace Prize. So this was the end of our fifth episode of Voices Are Action. You can find more about this and many other issues on our website, rwr.fm, our Twitter and Facebook pages, Real World Radio, and on Instagram at real_world_radio. Thank you for listening.
Voices are action.
In Real World Radio.